first of all, some reviews I'd like to start with, just to get you in the mood, just to, you know, let you know how good I am at comedy, basically. So here's the first one. Tom Moran is 6'5" of unadulterated genius. He can knock you for six with his one-liners and his fantastic charisma. He's also a wonderful son. That is my mum.
It started, I guess, with some insecurities from my time at school. I used to try and make people laugh, and no one used to laugh in lessons. And so I guess I got a bit of a chip on my shoulder and just kept going, just trying to make people laugh all the time. And one day I decided to do a show at school, which I didn't think anyone would come to, but they did for some reason, and did this big sort of comedy thing, and it went really well, and it was just the most amazing feeling. So then when I went to uni, I studied performance and script writing at UEA and met a load of comedians there who said, yeah, do you want to come give it a go? And that's when I did my first comedy night, and it was brilliant. I only did sort of 10 minutes or so. I can't remember ever being that nervous in my entire life. So I was thinking, can I actually stand up here and make people laugh? Yeah, turned out I could, so that went really well. And then I just started organising my own nights, because that's the only way, really, if you live somewhere like Norwich, to get out there and get performing all the time. Because if you go down to London, they only tend to give you 5 minutes, and that's not a great way to sort of get into it. You want to do as much as possible, as often as possible.
The next bit says, pick out someone in the audience and make them feel small. I don't normally do that. So I was writing this on Microsoft Word, and then I sort of wrote the first bit, and a little paperclip popped up and said, it looks like you're writing a comedy set. Would you like to use the standard template? I think, yes. Pick someone in the audience, make them feel small, preferably in the front row.
Well, I started Laugh Out Loud Comedy Club in 2006, and it's been going ever since and getting quite popular. Since then, quite a lot of other amateur comedy nights have started up in Norwich, but we're still the longest running one, so that's pretty good. And I don't run them anymore because I unfortunately have to work for a living, which is rubbish, but I've handed it over to two friends of mine who are still at uni, and I still compare the nights occasionally. There isn't a single gig I've done where I haven't felt absolutely terrified before going on. I kind of get this thing where the only place I want to be 5 minutes before going on stage is curled up in my bed in the fetal position, just crying. But I somehow get through it and get onto stage, and then the first minute is crucial. If you start saying, I normally start with some jokes that are, you know, proper jokes, that have proper punchlines, just to get the laughs in.
Incidentally, I went to see Coldplay the other day at a concert. And I was in the front row, and Chris Martin said, does anyone have any requests? And I said, yes, I do, Chris. And he said, Tom Morant, he knows me, Tom Morant, what is your request? And I said, can you play the sixth song from your first album? I should have realised at the time that I was just asking for trouble.
And if they go well, and you're getting the big laughs, then you relax, and it feels amazing, and being up there is amazing, and it's so exciting, and it's great, and it's the best feeling in the world. Basically, it's loads of people going, you're good at what you're doing all the time when they're laughing, which is only comedy where you get that. On the other hand, you could get constant criticism of just people not laughing. Well, it hasn't happened very often, but sometimes if you have a bad gig and that first minute doesn't go very well, then that's it. And then you start to shake and you start to get the sweats and you start gabbling, and it just goes completely downhill from that point. And all you want to do is just run off the stage, but you know that you can't because you've promised you'll do 7 minutes, so you do your 7 minutes, and it's awful.
Because I like to talk about relationships. I myself am in a relationship, believe it or not. Actually, this year I asked my girlfriend to marry me. Basically, I bought the ring, and then we went to Paris, and I had this idea of proposing on top of the Eiffel Tower. Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's still romantic. And we got there. Now, imagine the biggest queue you've ever seen at Alton Towers. Triple it, that's the queue for the Eiffel Tower. I was not going to waste my whole day queuing with a bunch of tourists to go up the Eiffel Tower to propose surrounded by other tourists. So I eventually proposed on the roof of the Norwich Forum, which is the second most romantic location in the world. It was better than that. I had like a whole elaborate treasure hunt that lasted 4 hours. That ended on the roof of the Norwich Forum, where I then proposed. I thought it was very important to have like a high up location, because if she said yes, it would be very romantic, with a nice view of the city, the sun setting, and if she said no, I could always push her off. She said yes, and we're getting married this year. So,
Jokes tend to come to me either when I'm having a shower or when I'm just drifting off to sleep. Your mind wanders when you're just trying to get to sleep, and sometimes jokes will come to me just out of nowhere. I've dreamt jokes before as well, which is good because, you know, you don't even have to consciously do any work then. They just turn up in your subconscious. But a lot of things are just about wordplay, and you just hear someone having a conversation just say a certain phrase and you think, ah, that's a well-known phrase, but I could twist that around and turn that into a joke. Or just funny stories from my life and my family, seeing ridiculous things on TV. Everything, really.
I have three ambitions and goals in life. Number one is to marry the woman I love. Yeah, it's not a joke, it's just a very sentimental, slushy thing I thought I'd throw out there so you don't think I'm a complete cock. Number two is to be very rich and famous and one day say these horrible things at Wembley Arena to thousands of oohs. It's not applauses. And third is to find out what the hell happens if you eat silica gel. Because, you know that stuff you get in new clothes is like a little bag of like balls and it says silica gel. Throw away. Do not eat. As if you would think, I don't know what this is, better eat it, I suppose. Because, you know, it might be food. I mean, what, they don't put that on other things you shouldn't eat, do they? Like cigarettes and jumpers.
I think a really clever wordplay joke that has the potential to be a little bit cheesy, but no one can see the punchline coming and they've laughed before they realise how cheesy it is. They're my favourite kind of jokes. I love those. I sometimes write jokes that are really clever, but not always funny. I sometimes tell them anyway because I think, nah, it's a clever joke. I'll do it. And it's got everything working for it. It's got a pullback and reveal. It's got wordplay. It's a funny pun. The only thing for some reason about it is that it's not funny. But yeah, the ones that of those types that are funny are my favourite ones. If I'm comparing, I try and do more one-liner kind of things just to keep the energy up. People don't have to focus on me too much. They can just go from one joke to the next. If I'm doing a set, I try and structure it more with stories that might include one-liners within them, some impressions and some songs. My best gig was the first time I tried to do a proper show all on my own. So 2 hours with an interval in the middle. Because I was performing so often, doing headline slots, a lot of the time to the same crowd, I'd have to write a new set every 2 weeks, which meant I've got this book of loads and loads of stuff. And I picked all the best stuff and thought, I've probably got about an hour here, what else could I do? So I decided I'd play the piano as well and do some songs, which could have been a bad decision because I don't know how to play the piano. So I thought, well, I'll teach myself how to play and I'll write some songs. I don't know what was going through my head at the time. I also play the drums and I've got an electronic drum kit. So I'll incorporate that in some way and just see what happens. So I'd be doing some comedy, just some of my normal material, larking about a bit, having a bit more fun, doing a bit more physical stuff maybe than I normally do, because I had quite a big stage to work with. And then every now and then I'd just go onto the piano or the drums and do a song, do some bits where I'd play the piano and the drums at the same time, did a rap. Yeah, it was really fun.
People say if you're middle class, you can't be a comedian as effectively. You can't do observational comedy because no one relates to it. I think they do. Like, don't you hate it when your brother, who has the same father as you, takes the last bit of asparagus? It's one thing. Other people say middle class people can't rap. Right? They say you have no angst. You know, because a lot of... No, this sounds awful, but a few rappers, a few working class rappers, do have a bit of a chip on their shoulder. And so they've got a lot of angst. We too have potato-based angst, probably more a kind of a saute-based genre, but something like that. And I think we could rap too, you know. NWA had Fuck the Police. We could have Phone the Police when we see some hooligans causing problems on our streets, for example. And people have said... But it can never be done until today. Go for the old hip hop R&B. It's not very middle class. Caught my son drinking lager, that's a fault with the auger. Couldn't start the espouse, so we were late for morning mass. But then my lovely colleague won a dog show. That was fun. I've got 99 problems, but the bitch is not one.
was excellent tonight. Really one of the best gigs we've had for a long time. Because the thing about an open mic gig as well is anyone can come and do something and they might be amazing or they might be absolutely terrible. That didn't happen tonight, which was great. Every single act we had was excellent. The energy was really good. I was comparing, which was really fun because I haven't done that for a while. And there were some great characters in the front row who I was chatting with for a while. And it was all new material, and that all went down really well, so I'll be using that again. Comparing is quite hard. It's quite different to doing a set, because if you've got anything that's slightly more controversial, people don't seem to be so open to it. As a compare, you're not like the other comedians. You're sort of supposed to be a bit like everyone's friend. So you have to be careful with the kind of stuff you do when you're comparing. But I did some fun stuff, some stories about Christmas and my weird family and things like that. The audience were very responsive. It was hit and miss to begin with, but it always is. If you go on as compare and you need to sort of try and bring people into the atmosphere of laughing, and so it's very, very difficult in the first few minutes always, and it's difficult for the first act as well in that respect. But it didn't take them long to warm up, and then they were, yeah, they were really involved. It was great.
What did you do in your interval, sir?
Drank.
Drank? What did you drink?
Some beer.
Beer?
Beer!
Beer! I had some beer! I like to drink wine. Myself, that's a personal preference. A lot of people think I'm gay because I do drama and I drink wine. I am gay. The only reason I have a girlfriend is because men don't want to have sex with me.
There are two ways you can go. You can either start doing comedy and then go into the kind of clubs like Jonglers and the Comedy Store and start touring with these kind of comedy companies, which is very different to the kind of thing you see on TV, like Live at the Apollo. Or you go into, somehow, if you get really lucky, you fight your way into onto TV, basically, and then become that, and then do the big gigs and do, you know, and become Michael McIntyre or Ricky Gervais or Jimmy Carr or any of the big names. I studied script writing at university, so I've done a few plays, and I'm working on all sorts of things at the moment. I'm trying to write a novel, which is harder than it seems. And always writing sketches and scripts and sending them off to the BBC. You just got to keep plugging away at it, basically, and hope one day someone will look at something you've written and just go, this isn't bad. And yeah, part of you is always thinking, I might be doing this for the rest of my life. But hopefully, at some point in my life, someone will read something I've done or see me on stage and go, actually, yeah, you can do this for a living and stop working in an adult learning centre.
Here's a message for the modern generation, for all the people in this happy little nation. Features comedy and witty conversation, tuned to Bournemouth Internet Radio Station. Shortened to burst.